I've also been in my career longer too.
I'd like to call the complaint committee back to order at 1:30 p.m. Okay. Ms. Calici?
Chikichi.
Okay.
Sorry.
So coming back around this piece of it, I don't know if we, well, first off, why don't you acknowledge who you are and by all means provide an opening statement. If you have one, you're not required to, but at least introduce yourself.
Yeah, Celine Chakiji. I'm the owner of Arizona Permanent Makeup Academy. I'm so happy to be here to present myself. So, okay, I'm in. And I'm happy to answer if you have any questions.
Okay. All right. Just for a matter of record, you were at one time teaching courses that would fall under this board's observance. Is that correct, as provided in the information to us?
I mean, she, one of the complaints is about a class that actually it's hard to answer this one because these people has been to my place, so have been to my place so many times, 100 times.
Well, I understand that. Particular classes, you were offering classes that should have been licensed by the state board. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. And then you recognize that you started the process to get licensure for that, and then you stopped that process. Mm-hmm. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. And at this point in time, you are not teaching those courses?
No.
Okay.
Permanent makeup classes are usually, again, like we have modified so much over the time. They also include hands-on practices before studying, etc. So that particular class changed so much over time anyways, even before I stopped teaching.
Okay. Were you aware that the classes that you were teaching required that state license?
No. When I decided to teach permanent makeup, I'm currently a teacher myself, and I'm employed by a Peoria school district. So I searched a lot. I came physically, like personally, to Department of Health to investigate how to teach, actually. I went everywhere. I called Board of Cosmetology. They told me that they didn't know or you're not required to. Everybody told me that there's no licensing. There's no requirement to be licensed. There is a misinformation, a lot of information in the public
okay.
when it comes to permanent makeup trainings.
When we when it was brought to your attention that it required licensing for the courses that you were teaching, did you continue to teach those courses?
No, I stopped immediately. I didn't offer again. I don't offer.
Okay.
It has been a while, like
okay.
immediately stopped.
Staff have anything additional they'd like to add or for clarity?
If I could, and I, not to overspeak school, but so the history, we had five or six schools that were operating. Most don't know they need a license because they contact the Department of Health Services and they say, no, we don't do anything with it. So they train, we send out the letter of intent, and then the general licensing packet. And then some will stop, some want to go through licensure. Most, and in this situation, they indicate they stopped training. The institution went through the licensing process. Now, this was going on for 3 or 4 months. And that's so as she was going through the licensing process, after the initial letter and the letter of intent was already submitted, she had these three students. So it came in, during the licensing phase with the board. Right? Yeah.
Three students, two of them, they have been, I knew them for a while. Like they have been to my shop for other services. They purchased products. They purchased pigments, cartridges. They paid for services. They got their eyebrows done, eyeliners done, etc. So after that letter, we became friends. Like,
And there's no... I'm sorry, we're not arguing, and it's not an issue of that relationship. Is that, for example, there's a certificate of completion that's dated December 13th, 2018. for the completion of the permanent makeup 100-hour comprehensive training program?
Claims, yeah.
Well, we're looking at one.
Right here.
I mean, that's what she submitted. So that's just the time frame of the history.
Okay. So that's actually kind of the concern, is that we have evidence that you did issue a certificate for a program you're not licensed, but you're sitting there telling us that you stopped doing it. So that's what our concern is, that if you have stopped doing it, that's what you should have done.
I understand. Let me explain. Amy and I told Amy, I gave her information when she wanted to. She has been teaching already. So I have here like web screenshots showing that she has been teaching. She's teaching currently. So I told her, I gave her information, kids' phone number. When I learned about this private post-secondary education board. So this is how she knows about kid and when things went wrong. Yeah, like personal stuff happened. I have also like screenshots of text messages. One of the person there, lady, she boyfriended one of my.
So we do understand that. The
yeah, there is personal problems. Like but, it's not about teaching. But, I accept that I did teach before, but these particular people, we have some personal problems. They want to humiliate me. They just, if you read everything they talk about, like, shut this place, shut this, it's dirty, it's like there's pigment everywhere. Like, it's not about teaching only, it's like more like personal attack, personal business attack.
Hang on a second. Here's the thing. Those things, like accusing you of not doing proper sanitation, all of that, which I hope it isn't true or you've stopped doing, because that's not good. But we license schools. Mm-hmm. You were found to be teaching a program that required licensure. You started the process. After you started the process, you issued a certificate of completion for an unlicensed program. We have it in front of us. So regardless of any personal issues you had with those students, or they were students, the bottom line is, you issued a certificate of completion that you were not licensed to do after the point that you were already going through the process and you should have known you were not allowed to do it. That is our point of contention, mm-hmm. is you gave this. So all that other stuff is really on the side and not relevant to this.
I understand, but when I saw the copy of this certificate of completion, again, I'm not saying that I did not issue, but these particular people, that is not my signature. Even on the certificate of completion, if you see that, it's not my legal signature there. I don't sign like that because I have other name. I sign with my like legal name or like my first name. So it sounds like strange, but again, there were so many personal problems with these people.
So just for clarity, are you saying that is you didn't? You did not sign that certificate, or that certificate did not come from you?
Wow. You know, there's a picture of you holding it up.
I have pictures. Again, like, that one, I don't know. Like, is it not my...
Isn't this the same certificate?
No.
Isn't it?
I'm not saying I did not teach. Again, we have a history of relationship with these people. Like, we were friends, we went to parties, they came to my place so many times.
We understand that. This is more, as my board member had mentioned, this is more about trying to validate that we're teaching courses that you knew were to be licensed, you were not yet licensed, and you had moved forward with that, which is in violation of the state standards around that piece. But we're also stuck here because at this point, you've not gone through with that. You've stopped the process from that standpoint. And so our jurisdiction is somewhat limited from that standpoint. But we at least did want to get onto record the fact that at one point in time, you were teaching courses that required licensure. You were aware of that. But you ultimately, you did not have that licensure. You have since stopped the process. And from what you've shared here today, you're saying you are no longer teaching those courses which require licensure, right?
Courses, fundamental classes, we don't teach anymore for a long time now. But the thing is, again, when we look at that cases, Amy, we are talking about Amy. Amy, on her letter, she says she took the class from somebody else. When she wanted to learn more, it's about, like,
no.
Like so many things like that. But so, I'm not saying that I did not. But again, because of the other problems.
Our position here as a committee is not to determine right or wrong of necessarily what you had going on with that particular student. However, in this particular case, making that determination of were you teaching or were you not. We do have it at this point. I'm content that we at least have captured that on our record, that you were aware of that, you were teaching that piece of it, but you have not continued with the licensure piece of it. So at this point,
I'd like to ask a question before I can. Why did you decide to just discontinue teaching it and opposed to going through the licensure process?
The thing is, when I submitted my letter didn't go through because it was open under a different name. It was AZPMU Academy. It should have been like Arizona Permanent Makeup Academy. So I didn't see any of the letters required by me or like other information. So
I think you were sent the packet. It was just really kind of some.
The packet was like, if you are not in the system, it's hard to understand what you need to do. Licensing means for most permanent makeup places in many states, it's just they come to your shop and they just license you immediately there.
I understand, it's more but like it's not our process in the state.
Again, on my side, I accept the I mean, of course.
Well, it wasn't that. It was just asked why you decided to back out of it.
I just want you to understand that, like, when you require licensing from a permanent makeup shop, it's more like, it's not licensing. We are opening. I'm opening a school. So I have to change so many things.
Like, understood.
Make this my shop look like a school, or all the enrollment agreements or catalogs, everything. So this doesn't come to you. It doesn't sink in exactly until you really see all this. You start talking about the requirements, like letters or like other requirements, paperwork.
Just as a cautionary, wherever you do business, it's your responsibility as the business owner, whatever it is, to understand regulations. It's not our job to have to tell you. You need to research and know that ahead of time. That being said, Ms. Stansfield.
I'm supposed
to.
Would you turn on your microphone, please?
She had begun the licensure process. There were a significant number of deficiencies with Mr. Blanchard's review, my review. We probably were way past our statute of allowing resubmissions. We probably allowed 3 or 4, and it became apparent that at that point in time, she was not going to be able to get before the board, so it was determined to withdraw the act.
Thank you for that background. I was just curious. The last question I have, and we can move on, but I'm very uncomfortable about the name of the school, Arizona Permanent Makeup Academy, and they're no longer doing permanent makeup. I don't know if there's anything we can do, but that, to me, is misleading or misleading the public.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I agree with that. And
just a statement. I see my attorneys looking at me.
I
have
like Arizona Permanent Makeup and Tattooing. So,
just a cautionary tale. This, you know,
yeah, you're right. You're
if
right.
I go there, I'll be like permanent. You don't offer permit. Okay. Anyway.
Exactly. I accept the responsibility. I know that it has to be a different way, but again, like, there's a misinformation, a great deal of misinformation when it comes to permanent makeup teaching. I did research a lot. Like, I did research a lot. Like, I went to education department. I called everywhere, and there was nobody to answer me. So when I talked to Board of Cosmetology, they told me if you are an LLC, and then you can issue a certificate. And most of the time, I'm a trainer member for Society of Permanent Cosmetics Association. I am one of 3 or 4 people in Arizona.
Completely respected on that piece.
Current, so it's kind of difficult to, if you don't know about state boards here, it's hard to relate yourself, because with, again, I'm a trainer member for that society, which is recognized nationwide, and permanent makeup is under private post-secondary education in only probably Arizona and maybe 1 or 2 more states. So I, again, like, it does lack of more like information on my side.
Appreciate you looking into that. I realize there's always a balance there. What we do know is that, that you have discontinued the process of seeking licensure, and you are not teaching, from your statement, those particular courses at this point in time. And I'll give the staff an opportunity here to clarify. Based on the review of what is being taught, nothing would fall under that of the jurisdiction of the board. Is that correct,
yes,
staff?
That's correct, based on what we've seen.
Okay. All right.
Talking about BB glow and nano needling? BB glow and nano needling?
That's correct.
Okay. So, recognizing that, any further questions from my board member?
No, ma'am, Mr. Chairman.
Would anyone like to make a motion?
I would.
Go ahead.
we'll find the right paperwork here. Back to Nathan. Obviously, since you are not a licensed school, and that doesn't mean you get to do whatever you want, so you don't have jurisdiction. Instead, it means that you need to not do anything that would fall under licensure unless you get licensed. And I had a high level of discomfort based on the fact that you were going through the process and were teaching after it. So it is my motion that we ask staff to send a clear cease and desist order that makes it clear that you are not allowed to teach these programs. And we will keep an eye on your website to make sure that you do not add anything else on it that would lend people to think that you are. So the motion is that the staff will send you a cease and desist order to make it very clear you're not allowed to do it. And should you come for a licensure, again, that will be part of the discussion. And that if you don't come for licensure, but you continue or begin again teaching or misleading, then that will be addressed. That's a long-winded motion, but there you go.
Glenn Tharp, second.
Okay. Further discussion?
I have a question from council. Do you do an order or a letter, or does it matter? Okay. Okay. She wanted to change her motion to a letter instead of a, because we do have cease and desist orders.
I used the wrong word there. Okay. So I amend my motion to say the staff will send a cease and desist letter, making it clear what you are not allowed to do.
Glenn Tharp, second the amended motion.
And just for clarity, I know we referenced the website or marketing from that. It would be any type of actual teaching of courses. So even if you didn't advertise and a student brought forward a complaint around the fact that they had taken that course, that would be viewed in the same way as you teaching the courses, just for clarity on that.
Okay. I'm well aware of that.
Okay.
With all due respect, again, to the board, right now I can give you a list of 20 places currently teaching permanent makeup fundamental classes. Including one of the, again, it's the...
Send them over.
So we'll be happy to deal with them as well.
Mary Bay, I like all the big names, permanent makeup artists, they are currently teaching. They have, listed for tomorrow, for the weekend, they have classes. going on. So I learned, I mean, now I know the process, but...
Our institutions send stuff to us all the time just for clarification, review, and to see if somebody's operating that shouldn't be operating. The one thing about permanent makeup, which is real difficult now in this day and age, is you have institutions come from out of state. They have a weekend somewhere that you have no idea where they're at. They just say Phoenix and a date, and you can't get, and then you're gone. And so it's a real, but if, and, you know, you can have the permanent makeup and all that. You just can't teach. And if they're teaching, just email them to me, and I'll reach out to them and send them a letter to have them get licensed.
Okay, we got them.
Bye to everybody. Like.
Allow us. You're more than welcome to discuss that outside. So if we could move forward with the vote.
Glenn Thorpe, aye.
Mike Romano, aye.
Trish Leonard, aye.
All right. Thank you very much for your time.
Here's another one. It's difficult.
All right. Moving on to item number 5 on our agenda, student complaint, with that of Arizona Summit School of Law, and with complaint RP. Mr. Blanchard, any update you'd like to provide?
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the complaint committee, complaint 20S001 was received on May 23rd, 2017. Just a quick history or the status of the law school. As the board knows, they are currently accredited by the American Bar Association on an approved teach-out plan. They are not admitting any students. They're not offering any credit-bearing courses. The institution has no staff other than acting President John Guprid? Guppelrud. That makes sense. And he is the only individual managing the completion of the teach-out. The beginning of the report, two questions to jurisdictions. These were discussed with RP, the complainant, in reference to the last date of attendance based on his transcripts, his submission, and the letters through July 2017 from the institution, and also the ADA compliance. In the third paragraph of the jurisdiction, I've highlighted the rule regarding specifics of the American Disabled Act and also the grade grievance. The summary has all the information submitted by RP. He has a declaration with all his attachments are included in the report. The institution did submit a response, and that's included in the information that was submitted for your review. To answer any of your questions regarding his complaint is RP, and for the institution, Arizona Summit is Benjamin Nielsen.
Okay. We'll start with the student complainant. And just as a reminder, we use initials here from that standpoint. So that's why we keep saying RP.
Mr. Chairman, I hate to be that guy, but again, I have a jurisdiction question about this one. It's noted in the write-up.
Can we discuss it here?
Yeah, you. Well, I was just going
if to, the rest of them feel, I'm just reading.
So
what I read.
I guess let's see where this goes. I was just going to clarify for both the student and for the school a couple things. One, this board's intent, this committee's intent, is not to determine the justification of the school's decisions around grading, of how the student was dismissed or any of that. Our requirement is verifying that the school followed their procedure of the appeals process, and that is the extent of it. So really all discussion that we would have today will really be around did the school follow their procedure of appeals? And if they did not, then we would have to determine action. But I realized there was an immense amount of other information that was included in this documentation that would be completely outside of the scope of this board for consideration. So I just clarified that would be our focus today in determination. So, Mr. Thorpe, I'm not sure if you still feel we need to have a jurisdiction discussion or not.
I just was noting what I read here. Staff questions it. I necessarily have a question about it. So if you think we do, I'm fine to go forward with it.
I have a question about the jurisdiction as well. The part that you just specified is very good. There are some things in here that we don't address. That's not the part I want to ask about now because you clarified that. It's a matter of, we have the time frames, and so the spring term had ended on 5/9, and he was dismissed on 5/30. And so the question ends up being for actual true jurisdiction of the timeliness of filing this complaint, separate from the fact that school is now closed and most of what he's asking for is not possible to do because the school can't accept anybody. But time-wise, does it fall under our jurisdiction given that the semester ended on 5/9? So his last day of attendance couldn't have been later than 5/9, but he was dismissed as an active student as of 5/30. So I don't know how that works in the way that our rules are written.
That was my question exactly. Thank you.
I was in summer school.
Oh, so.
I was in summer school.
We'll need an executive session.
Yes.
Well, we're just basing on the transcripts, the complaint, and then the submission of the institution regarding their timeline. That's all we can go by. I tried to get a hold of the two prior employees, but couldn't get a hold of them.
Okay. All right.
Do I have a motion?
We have a motion that we go into executive session to seek legal advice.
Glenn Tharp, second.
Vote.
Glenn Tharp, aye.
Mike Romano, aye.
Trish Leonard, aye.
All right, I'd like to call the complaint committee back to order at 2:08. All right. So, thank you very much for your patience. Appreciate that. So as we're looking through here, again, just a reminder, we want to refer to the student by their initials, RP, on this. RP, as we go into this, we have just a couple questions for clarity that you might be able to help us with. Right now, the transcript shows the last date of attendance on 5/9, 2017. And we know the complaint was filed later. In the time span, you would have been outside of the two-year window.
Right.
For that, but I believe your position is that you were that was not actually your last date of attendance, and so what the board really needs is to see something that validates and proves that you had a last day of attendance different than that of the 5/9 date beyond that of just your statement. So we're hoping you can help us with that.
Okay, so. There was actually I was actually in summer school when I was dismissed. I was literally in class and I received an email. As far as actual proof, like hard proof, I don't know that I could get it other than I was in Professor Spence's Contracts 1 class. I believe it was around 2:40 p.m. on May 30th. And there's an email that references the exact time that I received that. But I was a student, and I was enrolled in actually two classes.
Do you have any documentation that you could bring forward to support the fact that you were enrolled into that class? That
I was cut off from all access to any of my emails, anything like that. But I mean, there in some of the emails, there's references to, for instance, let me see. Yeah, I mean, there's references to me going to class, you know, on June. I was in the building on June 4th, whatever. But it's all there. I mean, I was in class. This is just a hard fact.
It references that you were on campus. That doesn't mean you were in class. So we understand that your enrollment was terminated on 5/30. And we're not trying to be difficult, but like literally legally of whether we have any jurisdiction to have a conversation with you. We're trying to figure out what your last day of attendance was. And the transcript is through 5/9, which is the last semester that you finished.
That's not true, and it's
well,
it's
May, it is May true. 30. It's the last term you finished, right? So as part of your official transcript for transferability credits, et cetera, that's what this is. So that's what we have. So if you attended summer school, which means not just like being on campus or studying or anything, like literally would be...
I was physically in class.
You don't have anything to prove that.
I mean, I...
You don't have any tests that you took, anything that shows a date?
It was... The first day of class was the 23rd. The next class, it was once a week, and the next class was the 30th. So I attended two classes. There would have been no tests. There's a reference in there to me returning Professor Spence her book that she had lent me during that time period. There's all kinds of little tie-ins to it. Right. I mean, I didn't think that this was going to be, a hang-up issue.
Well, it's a hang-up issue because it's in our rules. No.
All I can do is give you my word that I was there.
Well, we want to believe that, of course.
Right. I mean,
anybody could say anything without something to support that. But
yeah,
if we could maybe pause. Thank you for that. If we could maybe pause with the student. Do we have any representation by the school here?
Yes. Yes, so Mr. Chair.
So if you would, you can take a seat back and we'll invite the school forward.
What is the cutoff date that
we're looking for? Would be, well, we received the complaint on the May 20, or is it May, yeah, May 28th, so it'd have to be.
Well, no, I'm trying to understand, like, what date?
It's 2 years from his last date of attendance, and we received the complaint on May 28th, 2019.
Okay, and so the statement from him says dates attended were August 30th, 2016 to May 23rd, 2017. This is in...
Right.
Was this form completed by the student?
In the report, that was I spoke to him about that and said, you have May 23rd, and he goes, no, that was a typographical mistake, and it was the 30th.
Right, thank you.
That's based on the two-page complaint that I originally received on May 20th.
Okay. If you would just announce yourself, and then also please keep in mind that we're referring to the complaint with the initials.
Sure. Yes, my name is Ben Nielsen. I'm here on behalf of the Arizona Summit Law School. I can't personally attest to whether or not he was in summer school that summer. What I can point to is Exhibit B to my response, which I submitted, which is a letter from the school to RP stating, after completion of your spring 2017 term, your cumulative grade point average is below that required for good standing. Therefore, in accordance with the Arizona Summit Law School Student Handbook, you have been academically dismissed from your program of study at Arizona Summit Law School. So we have that in front of us. We have the dates and the transcripts in front of us. His testimony seems to conflict with all of that. This is certainly something we could look into after this meeting, if that's what the board would like us to do, to determine one way or the other. But I think the evidence we have here, hard evidence in front of us, suggests that May of 2017 was the last he was enrolled.
Would the state have... I know we've been collecting documentation from the school, but I don't know if we'd have any type of records to...
The transcripts I sent to you to review is our transcripts that came from us.
Would you be able to, are you aware of the practices in regards to attendance and the capturing of that for the school, for what the complaint has brought forward in regards to starting the class but not necessarily completing the class? Is that something you would wipe from your records, or is that something you would retain? The school's practice has been to retain that information.
I'm pretty confident that if he was enrolled in class, that is information that the school would still have. I can't swear to that, but it, based on what they have kept and that we've discussed, I would think that that is going to be information in their records.
Okay. Is there any reason that would not be in the records? That, to your aware?
To my knowledge, no.
Yes. To your knowledge?
No.
Can I mention one thing? In this packet, there's a letter from Summit that is dated 6-5. It says there'll be some accommodations for the fall, but the removing them for the honor code is dated 5-30. So that doesn't help us know if he's attending in summer.
Right.
It's odd that they sent a letter on June 7th.
If so.
I'm just looking for anything with a date that might help us answer it.
Please excuse our pauses. We're just trying to look through our information
as
well.
That's what I'm doing right now.
Just trying to see if we can help bring this to resolution without having to request to come back.
Come back in.
Attending and being dismissed from the summer term.
The July 27th, 2017.
Yeah.
Just trying to recall if there was the actual letter in here of when it was communicated to the student.
That's what I'm looking for, but
this information I thought was the May 30th letter, 2017, during the complaint.
Yeah, I was wondering if there was something that talked about, because it seems like he was dismissed for two reasons. One, his GPA.
His cumulative GPA.
Cumulative GPA. That would be based on SAP. Yeah. And then there was also the Unicode, which is the Unicode is like this. I was wondering if we had anything that talked about him being dismissed for the grade.
When did he complete his grievance procedure?
It would be the last letter in reference to the appeal. I believe the May 30th letter states that.
Is the end of the appeal?
Because it looks to me that it would be, from what I could get from the documentation, would have been the May 22nd. The investigation concluded on May 12th, 2017, as Director of Student Engagement. I began an Honor Code investigation pursuant to Honor Code. See Exhibit 2. The investigation concluded on May 22nd, 2017.
But that wasn't the appeal, was it? Mm-hmm. Did he appeal? That's the other question.
I don't know.
That may be another question that needs to be answered, is whether or not he exhausted his administrative remedies.
Well, it's clear that he did, based on the letters, that he had no other appeals. That's in the documentation.
And you're solid that May 30th shows that?
I'm just saying that the May 30th was, you know, it showed the last date of attendance. I know RP's, his understanding based on the history was May 30th, indicated in his original complaint to us was May 30th. The documentation came in July. The institution responded to the complaint based on what we had at the time.
I'm just bringing this to the committee's attention, just because your rule, last date of attendance or 2 years from when the administrative process was exhausted through the institution, the later of the two. So if
If that's the case, we do at least have a letter that takes us to May 30th, which would
I was just curious as to whether, or if you know when he exhausted his administrative remedies with the institution.
With respect to his grade appeals and reinstatement appeals, those are, those are letters attached to my response.
Okay, so May 30th?
It was after May 30th.
After May 30th?
July 27th was the denial of the grade appeal.
So it's the later of the two dates, so I believe.
We are good. Answers it. Now we can get down to business. All right. Thank you for your patience as we work through that. If the student would please come forward again. Okay. Again, just for clarity, as I know we've lost a little bit of time going back and forth. Again, this is really around the scope of did the school follow the procedures, albeit you may not be pleased with what they decided in their decisions between grades and other outstanding concerns that you've brought forward in regards to the institution. The scope of this complaint committee is did they follow their appeals process or not? And I believe you have some concerns to say they did not follow that. I know that's been included here, but if you'd like to provide us with a succinct message around that, please.
I would love to have met you guys under better circumstances, but what I can tell you is this. The reference to the appeals, that's why we're here today. I was completely denied all appeals, all due process, every step of the way. A huge part of it is the backstory, which literally is hundreds of pages of documents, OCR complaints, all kinds of other stuff. As far as the honor code violation, that was made up in retaliation. And we're not going to get into all that stuff. We've decided that. But I can tell you this. There was no due process. And even if there was due process, they cornered you into two different categories. It was either animus or arithmetic. So was there arithmetic error within the grades, or was it some kind of, you know, the professor had a grudge? It was neither of those. It was specifically they denied me my reasonable accommodations across the board. The OCR was completely on board with me on this, and they had to drop the whole case.
You can continue.
They had to drop the case, and because there's nobody to go after anymore. I mean, Arizona Summit is just, you know, lawyers and I don't know, maybe a couple administrative workers. These people have turned my life upside down. I'm $70,000+ in debt, nothing to show for it. And I got a 2.0. And here's the thing. I got that 2.0, and I worked really, really, really hard for it. They put up barriers in front of me that you would not believe the entire way. When I went to complain about it to Joe Perez, the academic dean, he denied me every single meeting. I have emails, oodles of emails of all the times that I tried to contact him. Dean Woolrich denied me. When they figured out that this was a very serious issue of them denying me my accommodations, that's when they became aggressive towards me. Not only did they accuse me of cheating, which is absolutely ridiculous, they put an injunction against workplace harassment against me. Two of Arizona's finest lawyers, out of the goodness of their heart, defended me against the school for what they did to me. They were trying to not only ruin me academically, they were trying to ruin me professionally. I like to think that I'm a good person, clean record. I have anything that I've done, even violence. I mean, like the things that I've been accused of by this school, by this administration, and it was all, they did this all to cover for, you know, the ills that they had done over the course of years. And, you know, I'm not sure what the remedy is, but I can tell you this. I got straight A's at Phoenix College for their paralegal program. All I needed was someone to work with me and to give me my accommodations. And they weren't even big. They were things like software that'll write what I speak, or things like extra time or getting notes.
Again, I think we're getting back to...
But yeah, at the end of the day, there was no due process.
So help us understand. It seems as though they communicated to you, which is part of their process. They communicated to you the concern. You then appealed. You chose.
No, I did not appeal.
Okay.
I did not appeal.
Then
these letters in here say
so,
they do.
Here's the thing. What invalidates that appeal is getting back to the whole. It either had to be animus or arithmetic. It was neither. My appeal was based on the denial of my accommodations, which should invalidate the tests at least, or give me another opportunity to test. Or how about, you know, we work on some kind of resolution at that time of me working my way back into the school as other students were able to do. They denied me every step of the way, from even dropping classes all the way to when I was terminated.
I'd say they said no in discussions, but ultimately your concerns were heard.
They were not.
They're stating right here, they read your statement, they read all this in there. I mean, there's letters to you from them telling you that they...
It's back and forth lawyer stuff about the, you know, how we were going to settle this stuff. I mean...
I can read it to you if you'd like. The academic senator, after careful review and considerations, has denied the grade appeal filed by your client, Ronald Perez. He appealed the grade of C, blah, 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 and it goes on to say, you know...
Oh, okay, so here's the caveat on that. So the caveat on that is this. Since we were cornered, his assistant wrote letters on my behalf, you know, just to have something. But that wasn't my appeal. My appeal was the fact that I was the tests were misadministered. And not only that, the things that they put me through all the way, you know, through that. I mean, it was... If we got into all the specifics, we could be here all day, but I guarantee you it'd be an interesting conversation of the things.
So what we have to work off of is what was submitted, the appeal, and it sounds like you had maybe other things you wanted to appeal, but of record, what was followed through the process of an actual appeal seemed to follow the standards of the school in allowing you to bring it forward. They heard it. They dispositioned it, they made a decision, and obviously moved on from that piece of it.
I was forbidden from being in contact with anybody, talking to anybody, defending myself. I had to write these letters through a lawyer. They were sent months after the fact. I mean, like, I'll give you an example. Those things say that, you know, the responses are all dated in July. I was dismissed in May 30th, and the appeals process is supposed to be exhausted within 2 weeks. So if it's going out into July, then, I mean, it just shows that this thing just got dragged on and on and on. I mean...
Well, we recognize it may start. It may not necessarily conclude based on how the situation evolves. But again, I'm not seeing anything to...
All I know is this is the whole thing was a farce. It was a farce. That appeal was like it was the only option that we had. But the bottom line is this school wronged me in so many different ways. I'm $90,000 in debt because there's other peripheral costs, including lawyers that I had to get. These people are animals, and they need to be dealt with. And you know, I'm hoping that you guys can do something, but my life has been turned upside down over this. I would like to go to law school still. And I have not only been turned down by every single school that I've applied to, but there's California law schools that are not ABA related. They won't even take me because of what they've done to my transcript. And I need something done. I need my good name back. The bottom line is their appeal process was a farce. When I tried to appeal, when I tried to approach Joe Perez in person, he denied me every step of the way. And then when I kept, you know, going to his office and showing up to his office, that's when his secretary put that restraining order on me. There was no violence. There was no anything. It was just, we need to get this guy away from us. This is the best way. This is harassment. Even the judge, when I had everything dismissed, even the judge scolded the people that were involved in this and were just in shock. They never talked to me. They didn't follow their own procedures within the book. I mean, the entire thing is just, you know, and even if I was to appeal, I'm appealing to the same people that wronged me in the first place.
So, due respect, our purpose here as a state board in regards to this matter and the complaint is around the policy. It seems as though it would make sense the other concerns you brought forward would make sense in front of another group. For us, reviewing, following the procedure and what you have provided and what the school has provided in reviewing that, again, comes down to, it seems as though the school followed their policy of that. I realize you disagree, and there seems to be many other aspects as well that bring you great concern. It's just out of the scope of this group. So I'm afraid you're, as I tried to explain at the beginning, I'm concerned that you're looking for us to make determinations and take actions in ways that we just can't take. What we can review is, did they follow the policy? Did you follow the policy? And if they didn't,
I'm in bad standing.
What action can we take?
With a 2.0. I don't know what can be done from that, but I'm in bad standing with a 2.0 that I don't even deserve that 2.0. I was held down, I was denied accommodations, and then my name is smeared, and I owe $90,000, and there's nothing that this board can do. I mean, I've been turned away by the OCR. I've been turned away by every lawyer that I went to because there's not enough money in this. And then I come to you guys, and you guys can't do anything either. These people wrecked a lot of lives, and I'm hoping that you guys can, you know, find it within yourselves to do something about this. But I don't care what those letters say. I didn't write them, whatever. I was in a bad place. The first time I ever committed or even considered suicide was after that event. I was in a bad, bad place, and they wrote what they had to write just to follow the ridiculous procedures. Animus or arithmetic, like those are the only two things that could possibly happen in the world. I mean, they literally denied me the ability to properly appeal this whole thing. I was not given due process. And even still, within like the realm of my, for instance, getting the injunction put on me, it also says in the student handbook that they are to inform me of any accusations against me, resolve it with me, talk to me, so on and so forth. They got the law involved. This is now a permanent part of my record. Like, so if I go to an employer, if I wanted to get a job, I have to start a business now. I mean, these people have turned my life upside down with just the nastiness of who they were and what they did. And I mean, I'm hoping that you guys can do something, but I do not deserve the sentence that was handed down to me. And everyone believes me that knows the entire story. Everyone, but the OCR, you know, they don't have a throat to choke. And I'm left with, you know, $90,000 holding the bag. And all I'm saying is like, you know, give me an opportunity. Not only that, but I mean, I can't even get into another school anymore. I need something done with those grades. I need something done with my academic record. I didn't deserve that.
Couple of things there. He's been trying to explain, first of all, what is it within our scope. We totally understand that you feel unjustified. I don't really understand how $90,000 for two semesters. So clearly that.
Oh, 70 just in tuition, but like you also got to figure. Yeah, the school was 70,000. Or, I mean, look at law schools. It's like it was like one of the top 10 most expensive law schools in the country.
The difficulty is that we only have so many rules we can follow. The school isn't in business, so we couldn't even petition for them to let you back in to change your GPA. And it's, hang on. Yeah. The school is teaching out. They legally can't even enroll you back in again. They're legally not allowed to. So what justification this board can do, we don't see evidence that they didn't follow their procedures. The timing of all of this, you know, it's now been 2 years since you were asked to remove yourself. And in that amount of time, the school has closed. So I don't think there was anything wrong with their procedures. You don't like the fact that they said grade appeals are based on two things. That's a very common policy. So I understand that you don't like it, but it's not any like personal harm to you that those were the rules.
No, it was.
Hang on. So they have written policies We have to look and see if they followed their written policies. You haven't given us anything in writing that shows that they didn't. We have things in writing that looks like the process went through, and a 2.0 GPA is not sufficient for law schools, so other law schools often let you in with that. I don't know what your GPA was for your prior schools, but law schools have the right, if another school doesn't let you in because of your GPA.
It's because of my bad standing, ma'am.
You don't need to get hostile to me, sir. I'm trying to help you, and the bottom line is...
You're giving me excuses of why you're going to deny me.
So I would ask, I realize this is a frustrating situation that has persisted for you for quite a period of time. We are trying to give you appropriate audience for that, truly. We are. We're also trying to just help you appreciate what our scope is and what we have the ability to do, which I think if you take some time to pause and reflect after this and review our statutes and what we have the ability to do, I think you'll understand our limitations of that. This isn't in some way we're trying to determine are you validated or not validated here. We're just trying to work within the statutes that we have to review your case to make a determination of did the school follow their practice and policy or not in regards to the appeals process. All the other activities sound very well founded. They're just not within the scope of this group. And so in some cases, we are as frustrated as you because there's nothing more that we ultimately can do from that standpoint. Certainly, the staff has the ability to continue to try and provide you guidance in other areas beyond the state board in this particular case. But that's all we're trying to do. We're not trying to bring you any more harm. We realize you're taking time out of your day to express your concerns to us, and we respect that. And again, we've tried to give you time for that. I would just ask that as we go through this, recognize we're not trying to hurt you. We're just trying to understand what's within our right, our ability, try to understand how the school proceeded with their what they describe as their policies and procedures within the appeals process, how you approached that side of it to determine what, if any, action can we take from that. So please just understand that's our intent with this. Frustrating extremely. Any further questions from the board for our student?
No, Mr. Chair.
I could invite the school back up again. I do have just a couple questions for the school. Have you had the opportunity to meet with the student outside of this setting with the state board to discuss the concerns that have been brought forward on any level?
I have not.
Can the school share its position, recognizing what has been shared here today, if any action or further discussion can take place around for the benefit of the student?
Sure. I think that just a couple of quick points. I think, Mr. Chair, you're right in the scope of this proceeding, this hearing. I understand that the concerns that have been expressed by the student are much larger than what we're looking at here. I think that we are just looking, as you've said, as to whether the policies and procedures were followed. I think that the evidence I've submitted demonstrates that they have been followed, that they were followed. You know, where the school finds itself now is unfortunate. I think that really what needs to be done probably is just a careful review of the record that's been submitted, and I don't know what else you would like me to do. I mean, I can talk with the student. Maybe I don't understand entirely your question.
I'm just trying to understand what the school in its current capacity is looking to do. I mean, you've heard from a student. We know other students have been impacted, and so.
Yeah. So, I mean, relative.
Giving you this opportunity.
I understand. Relative to this situation, I think that the complaint should clearly just be dismissed and no further action should be taken. I mean, the allegations that the school didn't follow its policies are belied by the record entirely. I mean, if you, and I attached the pertinent policies for the board's review, their Exhibit G to my letter, everything, all the exhibits before that clearly show, and the letter clearly demonstrates each and every step was taken with precision. Opportunities to be heard and respond were provided at every step of the way. Due process, all process that was due was given. As to this complaint here and what this board is looking at, clearly the complaint should be dismissed. It is without merit. As to the rest of it, I just think it, those are issues that lie elsewhere.
I'm not a lawyer myself, so I'm just, it sounds like, and I'm going to probably use my language on this, a restraining order was put in place preventing the student from coming to the school and bringing any further concerns forward. Is that correct?
Yes, there was a restraining order put in place. Certainly, there are differing views big time about why and whether that happened, whether it should have happened. Obviously, the school could put people in front of you that would tell you it was very justified, who felt unsafe, who felt threatened. They would testify to that under oath. I don't know that. Yes.
How would a student then bring forward their appeal to the school?
I don't have the injunction in front of me. I can't tell you the scope of it in its entirety. I know that I think that it was more limited than generally. You can't talk to anybody at the school. And the records show that he was able to appeal to the people that he needed to appeal to, that he met with many of the teachers specifically, that none of their grades were determined to be arbitrary or made with animus. Some of the materials he's...
I might disagree that he was allowed to. It looks like that was all done through an attorney. Appeals. So I would just, at least from the documentation I have, so I just would respectfully disagree with your summation that he was allowed to go talk to...
Sure, and...
...what he wanted to. Looks like he had to go through an attorney to get some action.
If I recall correctly, too, to the student's point... the school had an obligation to bring concerns forward to the student in regards to any concerns or allegations against them. It seems as though an order was put into place, but I didn't necessarily see anything to support the fact that the school followed its policies in regards to bringing forward those concerns to the attention of the student to give him the opportunity to defend himself in this particular case. Am I mistaken on that? I don't know if the staff received any records around that.
I mean, there are two questions pending I think are important. I can come back to the attorney one, but I do think that's very important to address. With respect to yours, yes, it wasn't just that he came in one day and then had an injunction the next day. I mean, clearly there was communication back and forth about, I mean, the student has admitted here today that he repeatedly showed up in this environment, and he obviously was told, do not continue to come here and do this. I think, again, all of this is part of a state court record that could be reviewed by a state court judge with jurisdiction to talk about it, and it was, in fact, ruled on by a state court, Superior Court judge. There was clearly discussions back and forth about the propriety of his conduct. And
in order to obtain an injunction, you have to file a petition to the court. The court did, and at that point, I issued a party injunction, but the party did not undertake the right to the evidentiary hearing in front of the judge to issue the injunction.
Thank you very much. I guess I'm just trying to appreciate, given the policy of the school, that if accusations are brought forward, they have an obligation to, before taking action, meet with the student. And what you've shared is, it sounds like he came in and continued to bring concerns forward and was told, go away. But then we move to actually taking out a restraining order, and I'm not sure the student had an opportunity within the school's policies of talking that through the honor code and that to actually have audience before action was taken by the school
I'm just trying to appreciate now, did the school take action without following its policy?
No, not in any circumstance. There's no evidence.
You have the ability to demonstrate how you sat down with the student and documented discussions of saying, we are concerned about your actions here and here, and as a result, we may need to put some type of restraint in order, or are you merely saying, no, absolutely not, because we told them to stop coming?
Couple things. One, it is my belief, I would have to go back and talk with the specific people involved. This is hearsay, and they're not here with us, but that they did absolutely meet with the student a lot of times, letters back and forth, in person, all of it.
Great. Then what I would ask is you go back and determine those, because I do think ultimately we'd like to see that as part of the complaint, because if you did take action, if the school took action from that standpoint, it would at least be worth discussion to say the school did seem to act outside of the scope of their policy by taking that action without first giving the student the opportunity to address that in a documented fashion. And so that would be something I think this committee would like to better understand. And since you have that documentation, that should not be a problem for you and the institution to provide. Correct?
I will go and find out what documentation I have, yes.
Okay.
That I can commit to. I do think it's very important to note that everything we're talking about now is not what's at issue. What's at issue and what is, according to the complaint, what was limited to, in his words alone, what he wants the board to focus his attention on is whether we broke our own policies and procedures with respect to the denial of grade and reinstatement appeals. This injunction stuff is entirely separate. It has nothing to do with the grade and reinstatement appeals.
So respectfully, I see it differently, and we might be advised differently at some later point. However, I would say it does seem the student has brought forward a concern that the school was unwilling to listen, unwilling to hear his concerns, and that they did violate a policy. And we certainly had other situations with the school where we've had to have discussions around these types of matters. And it just seems odd to me that if a school were to take action like a restraining order, they would follow their procedure of giving that student the audience, and that would be documented in some type of discussion appropriately. And as you stated, you should have letters that substantiate the fact that those discussions took place, making the student aware that he was at jeopardy or risk of that happening, versus just immediately taking action of a restraining order that would ultimately create a very difficult situation for a student who's trying to complete their schooling and now cannot appropriately engage with the school, only to find out that there was no discussion that took place consistent with the honor code policy and what that looks like. So I think we as a state board would have concern of a school acting in that way.
Sure. And I think that
Mr. Chair, I didn't ask them to submit that information.
I
appreciate what you're saying.
Right. I'll look to make a motion of continuation just based on that fact, because I do think it's important that based on the discussion here and what's taken place, the student may not necessarily completely have understood the policy and following those pieces of it, but if the school was handcuffing the student essentially by violating their own policy, and we're only learning about that through this discussion, again, whether we have jurisdiction or not, I don't know, but I think it's worth understanding that.
Sure.
Can I ask Mr. Nielsen? I think it would be helpful for the board to kind of timeline this out when you go back and gather those materials. So basically, I think the confusion is where in the timeline of all these appeals and disputes did that order of protection fall, whether or not he and his attorneys were still granted access to the materials and the communication after the order, or whether he was stonewalled by the order. And then any communications or any evidence that might show what led to the order. So if there was some imminent threat or harm that required that order to go through without having a conversation with the student, that would be helpful for the board.
Sure.
Otherwise, you know, the question would be, was there an opportunity not to have escalated this so high prior to it? But if there was an actual imminent, because there is a requirement in statute in order to get a injunction against workplace harassment, that there is an imminent threat. So they would have to demonstrate that. So if you have anything to that effect, perhaps that timeline of before, during, and after would be helpful for the board.
Sure. And I think that's a great point. That's what I was going to say as well.
There's confusion as to where that fell.
Absolutely. But, I mean, it's important to note that the entire injunction against harassment process is based on a threat of physical violence and fear, that people are put in reasonable apprehension for their physical well-being. Right. And so the statutes around that explicitly envision, and it happens every single day in this county and everywhere, someone going to a superior court judge without previously informing the person that is threatening them and making them feel apprehension for their physical safety, and then getting the court to make these determinations where that due process is and was provided. And so to suggest that someone would have to go and talk to their very threatener before going and seeking help from this court system, I think that goes against the statutes or surrounding injunctions.
And to clarify what Mr. Talera was speaking to is there is an opportunity for a hearing. By statute, once that injunction is granted, it's a temporary injunction, a hearing is held within a week. It's within the next week there is a hearing granted to the subject of the injunction, and that's when they would have an opportunity to say, this is frivolous, this is ridiculous, this is only in place to stonewall me. That would have been the opportunity is after service, in that first week after service.
I think I've requested that information to just better understand it, and I want to recognize we're in place to help our consumers as well, our students, as well as the institutions, and respectfully, a school that is teaching law, practicing law, is probably very knowledgeable about how to appropriately bring forward protection for the school. And ultimately, that could be very confusing for students who are learning in whatever educational process. And what we want to ensure is that we are following through on the consumer side of it. And if we can understand that better, we're not here to try and determine that today, but through the documents that you provide, maybe we can get greater clarity on trying to determine, again, did the school follow its policy or not?
Sure.
Okay.
And since part of the complaint, his part, is he wasn't able to go in person, and if this legal procedure prevented from going in person, but it allowed an avenue for it to be done through letters or whatever, be sure to specify that, because his desire to do in person doesn't mean that you didn't do what you were supposed to do as a school, because you didn't allow him to do in person if there was another avenue to do it. So the idea is to make sure the due process was followed. You followed your own policies. Like his complaint that he doesn't like the policy for the grades, you don't have to defend that part. You just have to defend that the school follow its policies correctly.
I understand. If I think there's one more point, I'd like to go back to Committee Member Tharp's point, if I may, because I think it's important. I don't think there's been any allegation here or in written product that RP's attorney was ever stopped from acting on his behalf. And an attorney acts as an agent for a client and for purposes of legal due process. I mean, you'll note that Arizona Summit Law School is not here today, but they are here as a matter of law through me. And so to the extent he was provided, and again, we're going to have to look at the timeline, because it may be that none of this is applicable at all in terms of the very short window that we were looking at. But people act through attorneys every day. I mean, attorneys write letters on behalf of their clients every day.
No doubt. I was not questioning that. I deal with attorneys almost every day, so I know that.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
lately. But, no, I was just trying to make his frustration point as quite. And again, it was his agent. I don't know how to deny that for RP, because it was his attorney. It's his attorney.
Given the request for additional information, does a motion need to take place at all? Okay.
And may I interact with somebody by email for purposes of just ensuring that we address all of the little pieces we've talked about?
Just the staff. I'll
continue to interact with Keith. Thank you.
Thank you.
We appreciate and respect the fact that this has persisted, and we're asking for a little more time and some additional information. We respect and appreciate your appearance to that piece of it, and we look forward to seeing you again.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Would Frank Guevara be available? He's at your firm, isn't he?
He works at my firm, yes. Yeah.
Would you be available to shed light on his position, because he was the Director of Student Engagement Honor Court Investigator?
He may. I mean, I don't want to speak for him. I don't.
Would he do a statement of some sort regarding his?
Yeah, I mean, and he, there are emails in the file with some of his positions, but could he put forth a statement that may be helpful? Very well, maybe. I don't want to commit to it right now without talking to him, but
okay.
It could be.
Thank you.
Till next time.
Thank you.
Last item on for complaints. This is a call to the public. All right, no public.
Okay.
I apologize for
no further action from that standpoint or discussion. Complaint committee adjourned at 2:56 p.m.